Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come, but they refused to come. Then he sent some more servants and said, 'Tell those who have been invited that I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fattened cattle have been butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet.' But they paid no attention and went off, one to his field, another to his business. The rest seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. Then he said to his servants, 'The wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. Go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find.' So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, both good and bad. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. 'Friend, how did you get in here without wedding clothes?' The man was speechless. Then the king told the attendants, 'Tie him hand and foot and throw him outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are invited, but few are chosen.'"
Well, bonjour. That's all I know. Guten Morgen. Thank you for sending us to France and to Germany and just to be attentive to what God is doing there through our missionaries and just hopefully to encourage them. And we were the ones who were incredibly encouraged. I bring you greetings. Greetings from Nicola and Priscilla and their children, Nathaniel, Timothy, and Jean Rinderknecht, from there in France, from Craig and Cynthia Davis, from Rick and Lisa and Nathan and Gabe and Nicholas and Mallory Kellum, and all three of those families are serving the Lord faithfully in France, and they give you greetings and thanks for just your support of them. And then in Germany, I bring you greetings as well from Jim Budlong, from Art and Becky Melly. Some of you that have been here for a while remember Art and Beckley. He was a youth pastor here at one point before he went out as well. And then also from Kim and Jenny Garrity and Colin and Eliza. And of course, several of these have children that I didn't name because they're not with them right there on the field. But I bring you greetings from these. And they all really just said, "Tell Henson thank you. Not just for the support that you're giving through the mission budget here, through what you give to the church, but I know several of you are supporting them and praying for them as individuals as well, and thank you." When we came here almost 3 years ago, I would be in the service, and I would be about to get up, and someone would say, "Gary, the Davises, they're here from France, and you need to go, and I mean, you need to recognize them." And I would say, "You're right, I do need to recognize them because I don't know who they are yet." And they're like, "No, I mean, you need to let everybody know they're here." And I want to do that, and I did do that. But to be able to be in these faithful people's homes and get to see what God is doing, it was an incredible blessing. And I asked Ed, who's our mission pastor, I said, "Ed, what I want to do is I want to go and I want to be with these people." And so hopefully this is the first of many opportunities just to get in the homes of our missionaries and see what God's doing and then to share with you. And I'm going to share at least a story this morning, and more will leak out in the weeks to come of stories of what God's doing in and through them. But one of the things that I also realized as I was there, several times the missionaries would ask me, they would say, "Gary, what is Henson doing? What is Henson up to in order to make sure the next generation has a heart for missions, has a heart for the gospel in Portland?" And of course, they're all living in Europe and so in way beyond Portland and Europe and beyond. And so it made me start thinking, what are we doing? And it gave me a great opportunity to if you'll let me use the cliche, to step outside of the trees and be able to see the forest of Henson for a moment and say, okay, what are we doing? And so I thought of a few things, and you can let me know of some other things. And there are many others that I know about, too, that just don't have time to talk about. But some of the things that came to my mind, for example, But you realize that 100 people at least, more than 100, Ed will have to give us the exact figures at some point, but over 100 people are going out in short-term missions this year from Henson. I mean, we're going to, as you saw this morning, to Senegal, to Pakistan, to India, to Brazil, to London, to Nogales, Mexico, to Colombia, to Peru, to and I know I've missed many, 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 but as God sends us beyond ourselves, what happens? He changes our hearts. And if our hearts are really changed, we can't come back and be different. It's just like yesterday in the heart of Portland weekend. I talked to so many people that were saying, we need to do this more than once a year. And people saying, I can go do this in my community. And this needs to be a way of life. This is just who we are and what we've been designed for. And those are the people that are getting it, my friends, because that's what we've been praying for, that we as a family would get it. Take the high schoolers here. I don't know if all of you even know kind of the cycle that we have for the high schoolers. 1 year, 2 years ago, they were able to go to a rural setting and just do backyard Bible clubs and help work on a church facility and minister to people in a small rural town to see what God's doing in a place unlike where we live. This year, they're going to San Francisco to work in a place similar to what we're doing or what we have an opportunity to be about here in Portland. And then the next year to some international type opportunity. Went to Portugal the last time and we'll see what happens the next time. But just helping them see. And then our children, you realize, I don't know, Judy's with the children right now, but we had several children who went all around the world last year and never left Henson Church. Because in Kids in Training, they spent time understanding the cultures of the world and just in what God is doing and can do there. And then we're partnering with World Venture and doing Jonah Missions Camp. And we have several adults and several children who have been involved in this camp up in Washington. And last year it was the same time as MAC Camp. And so we had kind of split. Some went to the missions camp and others stayed here at MAC Camp to work. And so this year we changed the time to make it to where they can participate in both. But the missions camp changed their time to make sure we could participate in both to the same date. So next year, hopefully we'll get that right. But God has just given us some opportunity after opportunity. And that's what this weekend, that's what this Heart of Portland weekend has been about as well. Just asking God, not only will you allow us to display your character in serving the city of Portland and let Portland see your kingdom come, but also just to hopefully, God, to just change our hearts and reshape our hearts and to move us to understand this is who we are. This is how we've been designed. Now, I said I'd share some stories. Let me share one. And I shared this story about a university experience in France that we had last week. And the reason I think I choose this story, first of all, is because this had opportunity to talk to some of these French students. I found out as I was talking to these students that the exact same conversations that I'm having on Hawthorne, I think I've said this before, but at least once a week I'll go to a restaurant on Hawthorne and I'll just eat there and I'll lay out my study things and I'll study there and just enjoy meeting people there. And it's amazing how people love to dialogue and just talk and are open for conversation and especially spiritual conversation. But these French students were very, very similar in even some of the things that they were saying. But what we did, we're on campus and I'm with Rick Kellum and he's working with Campus Crusade Ministries there. And so we walk up to these three guys, and these three guys are out on the lawn, and they had just eaten their lunch, and they were having a smoke before their next class took in. And so Rick asked them, he said, "Hey guys, I've got a friend of mine here, he's a pastor from the States. Just he'd like to talk to you, ask you some questions about the spiritual climate in France. Would you be open to talking with him?" And all three of the guys just, yeah, that'd be great. Come on, sit down with us and love to talk to you. And so I just joined them and Rick was translating as I was talking to these guys and just began asking the questions. The first question I asked, I said, "Do you have any friends who believe in God?" I didn't ask them if they believed in God. I didn't want one small question to be given and then the end of the discussion. Because two of them didn't believe in God. One was kind of dead, wasn't sure. But all of them knew people who did. And so we began talking and they began actually just opening up pieces of their lives. And it was very interesting too. At the end, they just said thank you, and they said thank you for helping us think beyond what we've been thinking about and challenging our beliefs. But one of the guys had three questions that I just want to throw out here. First question he asked, he said, does God, and of course he's kind of putting this, your God here, does God still have power today? Second question, what is paradise like? Well, it seemed like a very interesting question from a guy who's not sure there is a God anyway. Does your God still have power? What is paradise like? And the final question he asked was, does anyone have the right to punish? So these are the questions he wanted answered. See what, I'll go to how I answered those in just a moment. But before we do that, I want to use those questions because as we look at our passage in Matthew 22, those are three questions I think that really are going to help us to look at this passage. I didn't take him to this passage in Matthew 22, but based on those questions, it really would have been a good passage to take him. But let me use those questions to look at this passage for a moment, and then we'll go back to how I responded to him. You see, back in Matthew 22 that we had read for a moment ago, Jesus is offering this parable. And he begins by saying that he spoke to, or Matthew actually sets it up, saying that Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying the kingdom of heaven is like a king. Well, that makes sense. A kingdom must have a king. A king must have a kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. This king prepared a big party. Prepared a big party for his son. He sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come. But they refused to come. Now the first question that I think we need to ask is, if Jesus spoke to them again in parables, something's gone on before. Who's he speaking to already? And what's he saying again? Well, he's speaking to the religious elite of the day, or the spiritually elite of the day. And he's helping them. Matter of fact, he's helping them to come down off of their spiritual high horses and to realize that if they will trust, if they'll humble themselves and come under the reign of Jesus Christ, that they can be a part of this kingdom. They can be a part of God's kingdom, the kingdom of heaven. And he's speaking to these people, how do we know that? Because in verse 45, just before, in the chapter preceding, when the chief priests and Pharisees heard Jesus' parables, he'd already told two parables, and then this is the third one that we're looking at this morning, and they get it. They knew that he was talking about them. Wait a minute. This is about us here. So they looked for a way to arrest Jesus, but they were afraid of the crowd because the people held that he was a prophet. People are believing this man, so they're afraid of him, not sure. And so he launches in with one other parable to help them understand this story. They already know it's about them. And so he continues. Here's what the kingdom of heaven is about. So as we look at this, we're going to see in this parable of the kingdom of heaven, we're going to see a king who will represent God. And we'll see that he's generous, that he's loving, that he's patient. And this is the king that we represent, not only this weekend, but we as the church represent as his servants, as servants of the royal king, as royal servants, even if you will. So let's look at this together. The kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven, Campolo said in a book, I don't know how many years ago, I read it about 15 or 16 years ago, I guess. The kingdom of heaven is a party. The kingdom of heaven, he said, is like a king who prepared a party, a big party for his son. And he sent these servants to tell those who had been invited to the banquet to come. But they refused. They didn't come. This French student asked, is God powerful? Does God have power? Well, it's interesting, as we look at this parable of Jesus, he's speaking of the power of the king. And what is the power of the king used first and foremost for? First and foremost, the power of the king is used to prepare a party. He said the king prepared a party. He prepared a wedding banquet. Not only did he prepare the party, he invited to the party. Come to the party. Not only did he invite to the party, but we see that he did it again and again. He sent the servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come. Verse 4, then he sent some more servants and said, hey, tell them who've been invited. I've prepared a great dinner for you. So we see that God uses His power first and foremost for generosity, for love, to invite to His party. This is a shocking, I'll go out on a limb, even ludicrous, colossal tale that we have here. And before you say you came back from Europe as a heretic, calling Jesus' parable unbelievable, an unbelievable tale, let me explain what I mean. Because the people that were hearing it would have thought, my friends, that it was an unbelievable tale. We miss it. We miss it because of the cultural differences between us and them, of course, because of time and because of the place where we are. Let me tell you what I mean by this. Let's look at it together. The king prepared the party. The king prepared the party for his royal son. And he sends out invitations. Come to this wedding banquet. My son is getting married. Presumably my firstborn son, the son of royalty. He's getting married. Won't you come? Won't you come to the party? Now who is he talking to? Who would the king invite? Well, the king would invite his supporters. The king would invite special people. The king would invite people that we would think of important people, maybe dukes and lords and people that we know would be part of this culture and part of the ones wanting to come and the part of the ones that not only would want to come, but knew they must come because this is the king inviting. Now, surprisingly, everybody, not just some, but everybody turns down the invitation. Now, this is shocking because the king doesn't just send out invitations to recipients. The king says, I'm having a party and you're coming. You're part of this. This is what we're going to do. I mean, the people hearing Jesus tell this parable, they wouldn't have gone off and thought, well, wow, you know, that was kind of rude of that guy. I mean, he got an invitation from the king and how foolish was that? He didn't even go to the party of the king. How silly was that? That wouldn't have been what they thought. They would have thought, you got to be kidding me. I mean, this is treasonous. The king doesn't just invite to a party. The king commands. You go if the king tells you. I mean, if he sends his seal, he doesn't go out to Walmart and find a stack of invitations and send them out to everybody. It's the royal paper with the royal king's seal saying, here's what's happening. And then the story gets progressively more shocking as we go. Because what happens now, the king, if he's had this response of indifference, this response of not coming to the party, this great offense to him, instead of taking actions on his subjects, which we would think would happen, I mean, actions like, what do you mean they're not coming to my party? What do you mean? I'm the king. Go tell them, the king has sent for you. You're coming. Grab them. Bring them in. They're going to enjoy it. Come on in. It's not what happens at all. Not at all. As a matter of fact, we see just the opposite of that. We see the king displaying patience and grace and even mercy towards these people that have already denied the invitation. Watch what happens. One, the invitation is sent. Verse 3. He sent the servants to whom? To those who had already been invited. So they've already gotten the invitation. They're already seeing it. 2, verse 3 again. Now the servants are sent to those that have already gotten the invitation. They already hold it in hand. And now the king is gracious to send. Okay, you've gotten the invitation. Are you going to respond to this? Are you going to come to the wedding banquet? 3, verse 4. Then, after the first two, then he sent more servants. And not only did he send more servants, but this time he said, hey, tell those who have been invited that I've prepared my dinner. I mean, the king is inducing them to come. I mean, it's like us saying, you know, the next family night, we'd like to have more people, and so we're going to have dessert. And we're going to have chocolate croissants. We're going to have crepes. We're going to have creme brulee. We're going to have all this great stuff. So come. I mean, watch. My oxen, my fattened cattle have been butchered. Now see, that doesn't do a whole lot for us, but creme brulee, I'm there. But it's the culture. I mean, that's why we got to see the shock of this. They're saying, wait, how could anybody deny that? How could anybody not go? You'd have to go to that. This is the patient, loving, generous, gracious God that we're serving through the heart of Portland this weekend. This is His character. This is why we do what we do, because this is who we are. If we're in Christ, if we're in His kingdom, we display His character. We live, that's what we speak about, of making much of Christ and living Christ. We display His character, and we are the servants of the royal king. We are inviting to the party. We are inviting Portland to come under the reign of Christ and be part of the kingdom. And He's given us at least an angle here. This isn't the only angle, obviously, but an angle of the kingdom of heaven, of what the kingdom is like. And then, as I said, it gets progressively more outlandish. Not only does the king induce his guests to come, but they're refusing and refusing. Look at verse 5 again. But they paid no attention. Paid no attention to the king. And they went off, one to his field, another to his business. Simple indifference, isn't it? Well, I've got a farm to take care of. I've got a business to go take care of. Well, you're not going to respond to the king. Because of those duties, you didn't even want to get up in the morning. Yet you're going to use that as an excuse for the king's invitation? And not only that, the rest of them, verse 6, seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. Now the people are saying, this is a ridiculous story. Somebody doesn't go kill the king's servants just because they're inviting somebody to the wedding banquet. Somebody doesn't kill the king's servants just because they're representing the real king and saying, hey, come on in. It's ridiculous, isn't it? If we didn't know it were true. Parentheses. Recommend a good book to you. I've got to read a few more chapters because my son grabbed it and didn't let me read all the end of it. And I had grabbed it from Paige and didn't let her read it. And so when he finishes, I got to finish it, and then she'll get to finish it. Safely Home. Have you read that? Randy Alcorn's Safely Home. I see some. It talks about persecution in the church. And Paige had brought it to read, and then Caleb read it, and I read it. And now she's going to get to read on the church on the trip. But it was a great contrast for us because we saw in Germany and France just this indifference. Just this indifference to the gospel. I mean, we're on the university campuses and they would talk to us, but it's just like, oh well. And then at the same time, we were reading this book about real persecution in the underground church. And people are really killing people today, my friends, because they're given the invitation to the king's party. And it's really happening. But it seems ridiculous when we read about it like this. But we know it's real. What does the king do? Back to the story. The king does what is just. The king was enraged, Jesus tells us. And he sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. Well, they were murderers. It was just. And then I believe the story takes the most incredible and crazy turn of all. The king says to his servants, the wedding banquet is ready. The party's ready. What are you talking about, the party's ready? Nobody's coming. Can't be a party. Can't be a banquet. You can't have a banquet without people. What do you mean it's ready? Which helps us understand the party wasn't all about the people that he was inviting. Oh, the people got to get in on the party. And that's a beautiful picture. But you see, the king was going to honor his son, was going to bring glory to his royal son. And the responses of the people, whether it be indifference, whether it be total rejection, no matter what it is, that wasn't going to affect what was going to happen in honoring the son. The king says, verse 8, to his servants, the wedding banquet is ready. But those I invited, they didn't deserve to come. That's like the biggest understatement of the Bible, isn't it? So what does he say? Go to the street corners? Now wait a minute. This is a royal wedding feast. You don't go to the street corners. Invite them to the banquet. Invite anyone. Anyone? Anyone's invited to this banquet? Not just the royal people? Not just the people that have the card already to get in? No. So the servants went out into the streets and they gathered all the people they could find, both good and bad. Wait a minute. Good and bad? You don't have to be good already? Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? That's the point of the cross, my friends. The good and the bad. We can't be good enough. That's why Jesus went to the cross. To give us the clothing that we're going to read about in a moment. The royal wedding clothes to put on His righteousness. Because our best acts, our best stuff, our best spirituality, the Bible says is just insufficient. And so He says, I want to clothe you. I want to give you, I want to invite you to the banquet. Let you come in. And the wedding hall, watch this. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. The Son's going to be glorified. The Son's going to be honored. No matter the response. It's about the Son. It's about Him. And we have the opportunity to be in on this party. You see, this really, what this boils down to, is a story to really shock us into the reality of rejecting the gospel. How could somebody reject something like this? And Jesus tells a parable to say, look, it can happen. But I want you to see what it's like to really reject the gospel of Jesus Christ. How ludicrous it seems. Now the story could have ended here. But Jesus has another point to make. Now remember the audience? Those who are thinking that the party is for all about them. They're in on the party just because they got the invitation. They deserve it anyway. But, verse 11, when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. Friend, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? And the man was speechless. Then the king told the attendants, tie him hand and foot and throw him outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are invited, but few are chosen. Now, what is this all about? Let me see if I can explain. Remember, the king's prepared the wedding banquet. He's prepared the party. He's invited the guests. First, the Jews didn't respond. Didn't come under the reign of Jesus Christ. That's the Gentiles. We get to have opportunity to come in. But he's the king. He's prepared it. He's invited. Didn't come. Now he's going out into the streets. Go out to anyone. Let them know about that they can come in and put on the wedding clothes and be a part of the party. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The party's at 6 o'clock. It's about to begin. It's all ready. So come on in. Wait a minute. I don't have time. I don't have time to go home and get ready for this party. You know what? It doesn't matter. You don't have the clothes to get ready at your house anyway, is the point. You need the king's clothes. You need him to clothe you. Nobody has time, and it didn't matter if you did have time. You can't dress up enough for it. So now it's 6 o'clock, and the wedding banquet has started. And they're all gathered in. And the king comes in, but he sees one. And this one would be the religious elite or the spiritual elite that he's been talking to all along. The one that says, hey, this party's about me. I do good enough. I am good enough. I'm spiritual enough. Whatever it may be. And decided, got my own clothes, thank you. Make my own way into the party, thank you. And the king sees him. And he goes and he asks him, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? What's the man's response? What's his response? Just like you right now, speechless. He doesn't know what to say. He doesn't have a response. Why? Because he's before the king. And he realizes, wait, my clothes aren't sufficient. All the good stuff I've done, all the spiritual reasoning I've had, all the books I've read, all the good things I've popped, whatever you want to make your stack to be. He figures it out. It's not sufficient. I need some more clothes. It doesn't matter if I'd have had time to go home and get them. And again, my friends, it comes back. That's the point of the cross. Jesus has gone to the cross to take on the very wrath of God for indifference, for outright rebellion, for outright rejection, and to say, here, put on the clothes of my Son, put on His righteousness, and be a part of the party. But we have to humble ourselves. We have to submit to Him and come under His reign. And that's exactly what's happening here with this person who didn't. The kingdom of heaven is open. It's open for all who come under the reign of Christ. Paul said it like this in 2 Corinthians 5. I say the same. We implore you. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. God made Him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in Him, in Christ, we might become the righteousness of God, so that we might be clothed in His righteousness. Humble yourself and turn to God if you never have. Join the party. To the church. To the church. Let me speak finally to the church this morning. Hopefully we're learning to be the servants as are spoken of here. Servants are ignored. Servants are persecuted. And servants are believed. And if you continue giving the invitation, then you're going to find all three responses to the king as you're his servant. But keep on serving him. Keep on serving him. Because you see, serving is not all about me. It's not all about us. It's not about the servant. And as difficult as this may sound in our present day world, it's not even all about the one being served. But as we see, it's all about the master. It's all about the king and his glory. Therefore, we serve well. Therefore, we serve the king and we serve his kingdom together. Let me finish. I told you that I would go back to my conversation with those three French students. So let me, for a moment, go back to that conversation. Remember the questions? Does God still have power? What's paradise like? And does anyone have the right to punish? Thankfully, we'd had opportunity to listen to them and listen to these guys talk and ask questions and hear them and learn some from them. And one of the things that I learned was Vincent, and let me give you their names. Maybe you'll pray with them or for them with me. Vincent, Maxime, and Dimitri are the three guys' names. Well, Vincent had a friend of his die just recently, and he was trying to figure all that out. And so we figured out that, or it was became pretty obvious, actually, that his questions really were all kind of going back to figuring out this death thing, and where's his friend, and why did he die, and if there is a God, why did he let him die, and if there is a God, where's this paradise, and did God punish him, and what's going on with all this? So does God have power still today? Yes. Yes, he does. But he needed to, his question was, then why? Why my friend? Why this happened? And so what I did in helping think through this question of does God still have power today, I actually just, what I sought to do, hopefully I did it, I don't know what Rick was really saying to him in the first place. It may not have been saying anything I was talking about. But I was trying to do what Solomon did in Ecclesiastes. You read Ecclesiastes, and Solomon keeps taking you to these dead-end roads. And all these dead-end roads, you know, you experience that in life. We go to these dead-end roads, and finally, we find God. And we know this is the road that I've been wanting to travel. And so I just helped him think through some of those dead-end roads. For example, atheism. If he's an atheist, if there is no God, then it's all random chance anyway. And we shouldn't be asking the question in the first place. We don't ask why, because it's random. We can't know. There's no hope in that anyway. Case closed. It's done. Well, maybe you take the road down with a Buddhist. Why this? Does he have power? Why the death? Why all these things happen? Well, if you take this path down Buddhism, then you believe that, you know, it's just an illusion anyway. And it's not really real anyway. It's just us putting trying to understand our feelings. But it was real. You could see it in his face. It was real pain, and it had been real death. Hinduism, you take down that path for a little while. Where do you go? Well, you begin to say, well, something must have happened in a past life that now they're paying for that. That gives a lot of hope, doesn't it? Or maybe a Muslim. Let's take that path for a moment. But then you learn very quickly, we can't take that path because you can't question Allah. You don't question Allah. That's to show no faith, and there is no questioning. Oh, but the one true God, He can handle our hardest questions. And He wants us to question Him. He wants us to see who He is. He wants us to see His real character. Because He is generous and patient and loving. This is who He is. And so what we talked about, does He have power? We talked about how yes, He has power. But the reason that this guy wasn't seeing this power right now displayed in setting all of creation back to the way God originally designed it is because God is patient. God is patient. Peter says, 2 Peter 3, that God is not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. And so the reason God hasn't set everything back to the way He originally designed it is because of His patience. Because He wants people to respond to the invitation. He wants people to be a part of the kingdom. And so we're going to keep seeing chaos until all that have responded and ready to come to the party have responded. Second question, what's paradise like? What's this like? Again, interesting question from a guy who doesn't even believe there's a God. What is paradise like? Well, what we did, I said, you know, if we're going to understand what paradise is like, really we need to go backwards before we go forward. And so we spent some time talking about creation and how God originally created and He created things as He wanted them to be in perfection, and how through sin that we've distorted that and we've moved into chaos. And the postmodern world understands that and understands that we're moving towards disorder and are questioning everything. Thus the cross. Because there's no pat answer, there's no fix other than the cross of Jesus Christ to take the chaos, to take all the reason for everything going awry and bringing it to the cross to satisfy God, to satisfy His wrath and to mete out justice and mercy. We talked about heaven, and I don't know if you're like me, but when I, you know, see the chubby little babies on Hallmark card, it doesn't really excite me a whole lot. And I think this guy can say it more succinctly than I, so I'm just going to quote him. His name is John Dixon. I recommend the book to you. If I Were God, I'd End All Pain. This is about a 100-page book. And just a great little book. Let me read a quote from it. In the years after I became to believe in Christ, it always troubled me that I was now meant to enjoy the thought of escaping the physical world and entering a spiritual one called heaven. I loved the taste and smell and sight and sound and touch of this world. And here, I was being told to look forward to losing those five senses and having them replaced by some spiritual sixth sense. I wasn't terribly excited about it. Then someone challenged me, as I challenge you. Point to biblical texts that describe the afterlife as a disembodied nirvana-like bliss. He said I couldn't. Every passage I turn to challenged the Hollywood version of heaven. It turns out that the biblical kingdom come is not an ethereal place of clouds and ghosts, but a tangible place of real existence. It's a new creation. Whether or not we will gain a sixth sense, I have no idea, but I think we can count on keeping the other five senses. He goes on to say, this is a future that I can get excited about. It's a life in the fullest sense of the word. A reality in which the moral and physical tensions of our current world will be resolved through an extraordinary act of divine recreation. When I find myself doubting that such a fantastic hope should ever become a reality, I need only to go down to the beach near where I live or look up at the glorious sky, at the night sky, and remind myself, hey, God's already done it once. The proof is right there before my eyes. Why should I question His ability to do it a second time? Heaven, paradise. Finally, he said, does anyone have the right to punish? Now, I could have told him this parable about Jesus here, about the king and his royal son and the justness of what happens here to the rejection of the gospel and how ludicrous it is to reject the gospel. But I didn't. I said, I don't want to be crass by this, but what if, and he'd already told me he had a sister, and so I asked Vincent, I said, what if your sister was raped and brutally murdered? And I know that sounds horrible, but just for the sake of answering this question, would you want justice to be done? He looked at me and he said, just answer the question. I said, okay, I'm trying. And so I said, you know, I have two daughters. And if something horrid like that happened, I would want justice. And I can see in his eyes that he would want justice also. Why? Why do I want justice? Why would he want justice? Ultimately, because we're both made in the image of God. And God is just. And he's going to bring about justice. And he's going to right what's wrong? My friends, the cross, once again, is the only place where wrath and mercy meet, where justice and mercy meet. We have to run to the cross. Run to Christ. Run to Him. I wanted to say a final word to the church. This is it. We have a king. We're part of His kingdom. By God's grace, by God's help, that's part of what we're hoping, just to keep growing in us through weekends like this, through experiences like this that'll mark our full lives, not just a weekend. That we can serve the King. That we can serve His kingdom. And that we can keep on. That we can keep on offering the invitation to come to the party. To come to the kingdom. Father, thank You for this picture of Your kingdom. For this picture of what You are inviting us to as You invite us into Your kingdom. Lord, I pray now too for those that may be here and aren't exactly believing that they associate with the servant sent out and see themselves as the royal servants of Christ, but are more with the religious elite and more with those showing indifference or even rejection of the gospel. That, Father, that You'd do a miracle in their hearts right now and give not only the desire to come under the reign of Christ's kingship, to serve the royal Son, to ask forgiveness because of the work of the Son on the cross and His resurrection, and to be part of Your kingdom right now. I pray for you, if that's your heart, that you would ask Christ to just forgive you, that you'd turn your life to Him.